Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, it is now or never. As you know, we're just going to harp, because harassment isn't effective unless it's consistent. I'm your humble servant, right here with Reclaiming the Republic, and if you didn't know, this is G.R. Mobley. My voice may sound a little bit different sometimes. That's just because I'm going through those changes. Anyway, I want to remind you, we've got a very important message to Representative Cawthorn of North Carolina this coming Friday. So if you have not contacted them, if you're not called, remember, harassment isn't effective unless it's consistent. You just got to keep doing it. You got to keep saying it. People roll their eyes. They go, you keep on saying that, Ma. Anyway, that is how we become effective. Anyway, let's move on. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. One of the promos that I want to make sure you hear and you get this endorsement, get yourself, it will cost you $30, but get yourself a Wyoming Conservative Chronicle subscription. This way, you can actually read and have context, and then you can actually, some of these articles, you'll probably want to actually send into your local state or your other conservative newspapers of your area so that you can actually start promoting the Constitution, promoting these concepts of constitutional compliance. Anywho, as you know, we've got this Timber Nation endorsement, and if you're looking for good furniture, if you're looking for furniture that's going to last and actually become an heirloom that your grandchildren will be able to enjoy, good hardwood surfaces, whether they be tables, shelves, or what have you, please go check out TimberNation.com. I mean, you're talking about 2-inch thick platforms and surfaces and so forth. This isn't some thin, cheesy desk I have here. Yeah, that's right. That's solid walnut. Anyway, as I constantly, and I can't emphasize enough, this is a patriotic, small family business. If you want to actually have some, products, then you want to actually get something from them, do not hesitate. Pull the trigger quicker. You need to, if you're needing it by a certain time, then you need to reach out to them and get into their schedule, get into their pool of waiting. And, it is what it is. But the fact is, you're getting a piece of, I'd like to call it art, but it's actually a piece of history that is very unique, that was done and made for you. I mean, how you want to have these things finished and done. I mean, they do some, if you want to call it some of its cookie cutter stuff, like some of their audio racks or just basic shelves and so forth. But even still, everything that they do can and could be customized. All you've got to do is just communicate to them how you'd like it, and they will make it for you. Unlike anything that's coming in from China, you get what you've got, and that's what you get. In addition, Fortitude Financial Coaching by Gary Smith. Please give him Fortitude Financial Coaching out of Texas. Give Gary a call. He is an advocate, and he's a leader. I know this guy. I know his heart. He does truly care. He wants to help. And if you really want help, he will be in your corner. So you've got yourself a good, solid coach in your finances and in becoming financially successful. Now, we have our comment line, 425-270-5416. And what we want to do is we want to actually move forward to where we were before, because I really like to actually cover ground instead of having to rehash stuff. Now, one of the things I do need to rehash, because we were just stating this as we were basically departing, and I probably need to reemphasize one little basic factoid. And that one little factoid is, what is an unorganized militia? An unorganized militia is not a paramilitary organization, nor is it an organization that is based upon, you know, the militia as a defense system or defense force. The unorganized militia is the stage of actual citizens joining together and uniting in holding their government accountable to their constitution. We're the ones that delegated as sovereigns. We delegated our government, and in that we created a sovereignty of our government. We have to hold them within those realms of sovereignty, whether that be the county government, whether that be the state government, or whether that be the national government. And we need our county governments to help us in holding our state government accountable. This is why our petitions, all of your petitions need to be going to your county commissioners. Because they're your representatives. They're your local representatives. And this is why when you really look at, you know, all over the years, everybody has fought every battle at the national monuments and the national forum and going to Congress, that Congress is so big that they can take care of everything. That is an absolute lie, and it's a misnomer, because the Constitution has never delegated them those authorities. This is why we've wasted a lot of time, and we've actually helped empower them unconstitutionally by accepting the idea that we got to go to Congress to, you know, to regulate commerce, to regulate all these things that they have no authority to regulate. The only way we're going to get things straight is we have to start at our local level. As Thomas Jefferson explained when he was explaining the concept of political energy in the American government system, I don't know who it was he was talking to, but I can't believe that they were Americans. I believe that they were probably dignitaries and so forth. He basically stated that in our system, the power of the political power is the closest to the people, that the decisions made by government that affect people the most is the closest to them. In other words, it is at the county level. The national level has the least amount of power, and it doesn't affect the day-to-day lives of the American people. The further away you get from the people, the less effect it should have. Today, folks, ask yourself this one question. What little thing is the federal government doing that does not affect you? The fact that the cost of gas is what it is, the cost of everything, the inflation of our currency, every little thing that they're doing, every little thing that they're doing unconstitutionally is affecting us in so many different ways. The ripples are endless, and it's almost like, you know, all of those ping pong balls in a bingo chamber. They're just firing all over the place, bouncing off each other. It's almost like we're at critical mass. And we are at critical mass, which is why I keep saying, now or never. What's it going to take to get you involved? Because we're losing time. So the other thing I wanted to get back into before we move forward, I want to be clear. We notified you back in 2020. We were initiating a First Amendment petition in the state of Washington to remove Governor Inslee. We told you that this is the way to do this. We showed you how to do this. Now, we finally got our second petition, and actually it is happening in Washington. We've got some petitions that are, you know, kind of being watered or nurtured or what have you in other states. Come on, folks. What's it going to take? When are you going to get these petitions moving? You have to actually start getting petitions and getting people to start signing and understanding the importance of what these petitions are about. This is why I emphasized. I even went through the Constitution with you. And as a matter of fact, I'll reread this because, or I'll restate this. As I read this, I'm asserting this one very important part. That when it comes down to your right of petition for the redress of grievances, petitioning government for the redress of grievances, when you say petitioning government, that means you're petitioning your public servants. It doesn't matter if it's a governor. It doesn't matter if it's a sheriff. They're all our public servants. They are our government. And therefore, we have a right to petition them and hold them accountable. And so Congress shall make no law, abridging the ... right of the people, ... to petition the government for a redress of grievances. In other words, I just cut out three sections of the First Amendment to basically create a very lucid statement of the right of petition. And this is how it goes when I don't put the ... in. Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievances. They can't make any law. They can't create a close down of the system. If Congress is in session, they must be open to receive the people to petition them. There must be some process. And on the 6th of January, they violated the Constitution in not allowing the people to petition them. You know, everybody knew they were coming. They knew they were coming. They staged this whole facade, getting everybody to believe, trying to paint this as a insurrection. And they're getting, you know, there and actually pulling the wool over way too many people's eyes. And just going through that testimony, it just hurt my head to hear these idiots saying that they're doing my constitutional duty and I was scared for my life. Are you kidding me? Their constitutional duty is to the Constitution, not to Congress, not to protect Congress. Congress has to respond. They have to receive these petitions, and they're legally obligated to respond, folks. Don't let them sidestep. And this is why we'll get into this when we come back, why the First Amendment is applied all the way down to your county. Nobody can skirt this issue. Nobody can skirt this right from you. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's get into the 14th Amendment, because the 14th Amendment covers how this is applied in your state and county level. And it says it right here. This is the second sentence of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And I'm just amazed that there are what we call patriots, or people that consider themselves constitutionalists, that think that the 14th Amendment is a bad thing. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States. Now, so what does that mean? That means that all the protections that are provided under the Constitution are applied to the states. In other words, the states cannot take away your right of religious expression, your right of assembly, your right of petition, if it is an immunity or privilege that is guaranteed of the citizens of the United States, then it is something that the states cannot create a law or abridge those rights or privileges. So what does that mean? That means that your county can't create any kind of games. Now, let's talk about some games, because when it comes down to a petition, a voter's petition, isn't it true that when you go to do a voter petition, you have to have so many signatures? They have to be registered voters. They have to have, you have to obtain these signatures within a certain framework of time. In other words, they give you 60 days or whatever it is. Go look up petition restrictions and laws for ballot petitions and those types of things. You will find that they have laws against voter initiatives and those, but do not confuse your First Amendment right of petition, do not confuse your First Amendment right of petition as a petition, a ballot petition, or any other form of petition. This is a petition that they can make no law that abridges your right to do. In other words, if it's going to take you 30 minutes to articulate your petition for the redress of grievances, then it's going to take 30 minutes. And they have to, it's their job to receive it and to respond in kind. So, that being what it is, I want you to understand, how is this not a good thing? How is the 14th Amendment, by applying and protecting your right of petition, how is that a bad thing? Better yet, give me, because I've asked people this, give me one example where the Constitution creates a privilege or immunity. And when I'm talking about federal law, I'm talking about the Constitution's enumerated powers. Where in the Constitution, where there are privileges and immunities for U.S. citizens, i.e. if you go to the Article 4, if you go into Article 1, there are some protections against certain types of laws. Those privileges and or immunities, we're to have the immunity from ex post facto laws or bills of attainder. And that means your county level can't create bills of attainder either. See, this is where the progressives like to utilize parts of the 14th Amendment, but they tell you, oh, well, yeah, the 14th Amendment's bad because, you know, it's not what they say. And everybody's lying to you regarding the 14th Amendment. I truly believe, and I truly ask and challenge anybody, if you lack knowledge, ask of him. Pray, fast, do whatever you have to do and however it is you obtain absolute knowledge regarding something at a spiritual level. Everybody has a spiritual level. Go and seek. There's no doubt in my mind that when you actually seek the truth regarding the 14th Amendment, you will actually see that what we were given in the 14th Amendment actually deals with almost all of these problems. It deals with the sovereign citizen movement regarding both Section 1, Section 2, Section 3, and Section 4. All four sections help resolve these issues that the sovereign citizen movement is confusing people on. I want you to understand that the 14th Amendment is probably the most important part, the most important amendment that the people actually received, where they actually were able to protect themselves. Because when you look at Section 3, Section 3 is the one part of the 14th Amendment where we didn't have any consequences to hold against our public servants who violated their oath of office. Well, now we do. You can't tell me that's not important. And I challenge anybody, you ask anybody, that has to say anything bad about the 14th Amendment. Show me how the 14th Amendment is bad. Show me what part of Section 1 is bad. And then if they think they can start, you know, word-whizzing you and saying, oh, well, this due process or whatever, some of the rulings that came off of that, those rulings are subverting the 14th Amendment. There's no doubt in my mind the 14th Amendment was subverted by the Supreme Court. And the government subverted it as well. But if you go and read the 14th Amendment and you read the debates on the 14th Amendment, it's a hand down, it's a closed shut case,
what is it, shut and close, because close and shut, anyway. You know, I sometimes I think I might be dyslexic because, you know, I commonly reverse words, first letters of words and so forth in the orders. And so anyway, I have my challenges, especially when I try to talk too fast. Getting back to what we have to do. As I was saying, in 2020, we initiated this First Amendment petition. We invited you to start getting involved. We finally have something moving. We actually have a few things moving. Now, one of the things, I will say this, I know that we've been able to get First Amendment petitions going in Wyoming, going after the school boards in Wyoming. And that only happened because I kept on poking people in social media, not because they were listening to this show. So I know our influences sometimes go beyond the realms of just, you know, maybe the radio or what have you, but we have to use our influence in everything we do. And so this is why I think it's important. You know, had I walked away from Facebook after 2020, I would not have been able to engage regarding this critical race theory and as well as the morphing of sexual identities of children in the school system in getting people to actually say, oh, wow, you know, because nobody ever thought of using a First Amendment petition of the school board. Are they not public servants? Don't you elect them? Hold them accountable. They have to take their arm to the square to support the Constitution, not some political agenda. Let me make that clear. They have to support the Constitution, not a party, not an agenda, nothing else but the Constitution. And when you come to them and say, this is the law of the land, if they don't support it, then you get rid of them. And they were very quick to try to shut these people down. And it doesn't take long for all of a sudden people getting the sheriff and other people involved to next thing you know, voila. And if you look at the outcome, go look at who just got appointed. Actually, it was just not too long ago. It was about a month, month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago, that they basically have a new ultra-conservative state superintendent of the education system. And these are all good things to see how people are getting engaged. But please believe me that this is not the end. Just because you have a little victory here, that means nothing. Until we obtain full compliance, we're still in danger. We have to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. The battle rages on. So let's get back to the organization, shall we? I mean, we really do need to focus on what this organization is. So we kind of talked about you and your leadership team, right? And we kind of really quickly pointed out that there's these roles. There's the communications, public relations, recruiting, trainer, petition manager, and events coordinator or petition coordinator. There's a group coordinator. So it may take a couple of people. Once you're getting other people to get involved, probably the first person you probably want to get involved is to get somebody to take over either the petitioning and or the events. You know, if it's just two of you, one of you has to do the petitioning, the other one has to do the events and manage those two or coordinate those two things. And so with two people, it shouldn't be hard to coordinate getting those things done. And you just press forward. You may want to wait, you know, and make sure that you get optimum attendance over time. But, you know, once you schedule something, once the Lord scheduled the Sabbath on the Sabbath, and either we make the Sabbath holy and we either recognize the Sabbath or, you know, we go by our own schedule and agenda and we're unable to take the benefits of attending and honoring the Sabbath. It's the same thing in everything else that you were doing, right? So why is it and why wouldn't you want to actually just schedule something? And if you kind of look at your community, you don't want to do something on Sunday, maybe. Maybe you want to do it on a Saturday evening, Saturday morning. Start looking. I mean, there's lots of people that like doing things on Friday. But let me ask you this. Is your date night on Friday more important than your liberties? As a matter of fact, if you believe your liberties are important, make your date night an event for liberty. If, I'm just telling you, you have to start swinging the bat and you have to try to get as many people to understand the importance. Doing that kind of an event, in other words, once a month or twice a month on a Friday night, getting everybody together. And, oh, well, we got football games. We got, are you kidding me? I understand that we have kids. What kind of example are we sending our kids when we think that our amusements and pleasures of watching them play, when we should be fighting for their liberty? We're at the cusp of them losing their liberty. That's me pounding on the desk, if you hear that little tapping there. Anyway, we're at the cusp of losing our liberty. I want you to explain to your kids. I want you to tell them why, when all is lost, why you chose to just go to their games when you had opportunities to attend events that would not have created other conflict other than the conflict of the pleasures and those other things in life. We're not at a point in time, folks, where we can enjoy pleasures, and we seem to make them a priority. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so now we're moving forward in this paradigm of getting more organized at your county level. And we've already kind of covered that your county is already divided into governmental sections. Governmental sections are based on voters and precincts. They can't. What they've done is they've taken your county and they've kind of apportioned your district leadership, because most of the counties have actually come into this concept of democracy. Now, originally, counties were actually represented by what we would call supervisors. And these were all volunteers, but they were community supervisors. In other words, if you had a city and you had a few other towns and maybe a small city, a big city, small city, and a few towns, at the county level, there was this representation, and each of the cities and towns would have a supervisor that would be a part of the county board of supervisors. The interesting thing is that everybody had this equal play. There wasn't to be, and this was the concept of our Republican form of government, that just because you had a larger body of people doesn't mean that you can actually, you know, dominate everything. Well, over time, democracy and the concept of democracy started propagating to where, yeah, hey, we have more people. We should have a bigger voice. Actually, it's different. And actually, if you look at the capitalistic side of corporations, he who has the most votes or the most stock in a corporation controls the decisions of the corporation. And I can understand that in a business sense. In other words, that person's the most vested. They have the most to lose. They should have the most to say. But when it comes to government, government is supposed to be blind. I've told you this, right? When justice is perfect, justice is blind. Justice doesn't take into effect these little factors of what your race is, what your gender is, or anything else. When it comes to government being blind, it means that it doesn't matter how many people are in your city. Your city is the same as all other cities. They all need services. Now, there may be justifications and reasons why certain services may need to be afforded to one city or one town where another service can't be. And a good example of that is where you have the city itself, a large city, doing its own water and sewage and those types of things, where these other towns don't. And so they may need services for, doing wells. They may need services for, doing septic tanks and those types of things. And the county has to provide that type of engineering service and so forth, which means that there will be county employees who will have to go out and make sure that both your well as your septic system are meeting certain standards, where the city basically does some of that for themselves. So if you really think about it, the intent behind our Republican form of government is to protect the minority, to make sure that they don't become disenfranchised. And we hear this when we hear racism regarding voting. Oh, well, we don't want this particular race to be disenfranchised because there's so little of them. How are they disenfranchised? And we have to really start putting it down, because when they start saying, oh, well, you're putting this poll tax. No, clearly, the Constitution says you cannot use a poll tax for, providing access to voting. If you use a poll tax, then you're creating a barrier for just a person to be able to vote. And in the Constitution, they just said, okay, any U.S. citizen can vote. In some ways, that was a bad thing. In some ways, that was a good thing, because bottom line, we opened up the concept of democracy, which is a bad thing. What we should have done was we should have qualified who can vote in what type of issue. Should a person be able to vote for their own representative? I don't have a problem with that. If you want representation, and if you're a citizen, you deserve representation. The Constitution affords that. So I can see that. But you should not be able to vote in things like land taxes and property taxes. If you're not vested and you don't have any investment at all in land or anything else, you should not be able to vote on those things. I mean, this is the concept and paradigm that got lost as they just quickly dove in, and they deliberately did this because they wanted us to be ensconced in democracy. Why? Because the lesson of democracy was already taught over 250 years ago. At the same time, the framers were basically framing this network, this nation, and this network of states. They were actually well aware of Alexander Teitler's cycle of democracy. They already were preaching this. Alexander Teitler actually just put down onto paper he was stating the obvious, that almost everybody, it was domain knowledge, common knowledge. Everybody knew that as long as you allowed democracy to prevail, it would actually collapse itself in 200 years. Because eventually the people would start voting for taking from those that, that make and to give to those who become takers. In other words, the old redistribution of wealth. And they instantly implement destructive, laws, taxations, and those types of things that collapse their system. So we understand that. And they embraced this concept. They endorsed it, and they actually championed this migration towards democracy. You have to understand that they know what they're doing. They know because this has been done throughout the generations and throughout the annals of history. Societies have fallen based on the exact same tactics, and we're seeing it all play out. So anyway, as we get into these basic roles and you create these organizations and you create these different counties, then each county is going to have its own executive committee, or not county, each district in your county will have to have its own executive committee. And within those committees, we actually want to create what we would call this overall membership. Now, I don't think you actually have to have a treasurer down in your district level, but you do have to have a treasurer, you have to have a secretary, you have to have, you know, these basic functions that are a part of the county or the unorganized militia's county's central committee. So as you start organizing your unorganized militia, you actually need to start identifying what you've got and how you're going to administer and move forward. Now, I give you one petition that you need to start driving in your county right now. You need to start petitioning your county commissioners and supervisors for the opportunity and access to a county committeeman. Because right now, the people that are going up to the state house are party representatives, not representatives of the people of the county. And you need to kibosh the party's ability to be able to have voice and controlling and access. As a matter of fact, I will point out again that when your public servants take an oath, they are to support the Constitution, not the party. So when the party comes up from the county and engages in direct access of representation, that to me is wrong. It's wrong on so many levels. And so what we have to do is we have to start using petitions to start waking up and to start pointing out. I will tell you, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And as you create this laundry list of petitions that you start driving, and you drive them every year. As a matter of fact, you need to be bigger and broader and hitting harder and harder, because eventually these petitions will be answered. They will be answered because people will stand up as your district or your county commissioners, your county supervisors. They will stand up and say, I will listen to you. We will take away the county committeemen from the parties. We will make sure that only representatives of the county will go up to the state legislature. And that's how we get things done. Because when these guys go up for election, and right now I believe in Spokane County, there's either three or four seats that are open up because they're adding two seats this year. In other words, there's two unoccupied seats that are coming up that they just went from 3 to 5 in Spokane County. And so that means that there are two seats that are wide open. Well, guess what? By using these petitions, we now have a narrative to drive in the election process to say, we demand to be listened to. We are the people. And getting and making sure that the people that are going to accept that position will listen and honor the petitions of the people. Isn't that a beautiful thing? You see my point? You see, we don't necessarily, there are consequences. I mean, legally, we're supposed to not have to pay taxes when government is being repressive, or I should say oppressive. We don't have to pay for our own oppression. And so what we have, and this was a Benjamin Franklin, we go through this, and as a matter of fact, if you want the history of the First Amendment petition, go to the petitions page on reclaimingtherepublic.org. And go to the very bottom of the page, and right there we have a beautiful document that Bob Schultz wrote and gives you the full history of the petition and where it came from in the Magna Carta and what the consequences were way back then. And as it moved into this constitutional republic, the concept behind the petition and how it remained as a part of our law, as a part of our Bill of Rights, as a part of our government. So we'll be back. And I'll get something for my throat because I'm getting kind of parched. Anyway, there's a lot more. We want to get into the actual, not the executive committees, but some of the committees underneath the executive committee that actually will be driving issues in your county. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so here are some of the subcommittees. Now, let's, before I get into the subcommittees, are these committees that will actually be driving what we will call primary issues for your county. I want you to, when we get to those, I kind of want to let you see what these things encompass and why they encompass these things, as getting back to what Thomas Jefferson said in moving the decisions of government closest to the people. But one of the things that we want to talk about, this is the central committee for the county. In other words, your unorganized militia central committee. You're going to have yourself a chair, a vice chair, co-chair, whatever you want to call them, a committee man or a committee woman or chairman or chairwoman, whatever. However you want to do it. I think that you're making a huge mistake when you make it based on gender. You've got to get rid of any semblance of gender or what have you. Anything that points to demographics. Okay, so you have your county. So here are the members, right? And as a matter of fact, the members aren't necessarily all voting members, okay? As a matter of fact, your county or parish commissioners or supervisors, they're members of this. They should be members of this, but they're not voting members. The same thing with the county committeeman. Until the county committeeman becomes a part of the county, but they shouldn't be voting members either. And your sheriff is really not a voting member either, unless it is necessary to break a tie vote. Now, if you have a militia, there are organized militias in some counties. If you actually have a militia in your county, then the commander or the executive officer is a vote in this committee. Your chair is a vote in the committee. Your subdivision chairs and vice chairs, in other words, both. In other words, if you have subdivisions and you want to have either a single chair or if you have two chairs, if a chair and a vice chair, whatever those two chairs are, or one chair, that is a voting member. Okay, so the chair or vice chair or both of the central committee of the entire unorganized militia for the county, That's a voting member as well. So your district members or the subdivisions, that's what a subdivision is your district members or your district chairs. They and or the two executives are voting members as well. Your county parish commissioners or supervisors are not. The county committeeman is not, but they're members. They're invited to attend. Your petition director that is a part of the executive committee, he is a voting member as well. Your community watch director, this is the person that's in charge of the security, physical security, but not your militia. In other words, this is the civilian side, and we'll get into this a little bit. Oh, let me do it right now. Why do you have a community watch director? Because if there happens to be notice that all of a sudden there's a bunch of people that are coming in and they don't even speak English, come to find out, you know, you need to find out what they are, who they are, where they're coming from. Are they illegals that are, you know, being migrated in by the government? If they are, in other words, it's a refugee resettlement, then it needs to be announced, because here we now have unconstitutional people that are within the county. You do not have to accept them as inhabitants or legal. Now, the federal government does have the right to manage and maintain the immigration laws. But refugees and refugee movements and settlements are not within those immigration laws. We've never delegated that. So we have to earmark and we have to be aware of where these people are, because these people will have to be moved when we finally, once we finally take back the nation, all people that have been settled here, all people who are invaders or have been brought here unconstitutionally will have to be returned. We have no business resettling people away from their motherland, away from their home, whether they want to come here or not. The federal government does not have the authority to do that, period. And we will have to do what it takes to actually help them get back to where they belong. Common law director. Okay, so you have a common law court and you have a common law grand juries and what have you. The common law director, which is also a part of the executive committee, same thing with the community watch director. This is also a part of the executive committee. These three members are actual, I'll just say they're actual voting members. The treasurer and the secretary, voting members. The central committee chairs, I've already kind of covered that. I don't want to confuse things. And again, the sheriff himself or herself is not a voting member unless it is necessary for a tie. But what you want to do is you want to make these things public meetings. This is open for anybody and everybody who is a true patriot that supports the Constitution. It is time we start holding everybody accountable. And to do so, we all have to be equally informed in understanding how they are to be accountable to, or you know, what are the standards and how we're going to hold them accountable. And petitions is the big weapon. It's the big stick at this point. We have to use them. And so we've been really kind of helped driving all of this. But anyway, let's look at these executive committees. Now, we kind of already covered some of them. But the biggest and most important committee, which isn't a voting member, it is kind of like your, if you want to call it a think tank, the director of this committee is a constitutional compliance director. And the committee is the Constitutional Compliance Committee. And this is a very hard-working committee, because they're the ones that are going through and clearly delineating. And this is not that hard. They're basically a committee that is going to follow what we basically established at the state level in Wyoming. In HB 132, we've already created this concept of what this is and who's to be a part of it. And it's a duty of all people to ensure constitutional compliance. And so this is an advising committee to the executive committee of the county. In other words, they're there to provide advice and advice, information, and so forth, so that the county can make the best decisions warranted under the Constitution. The First Amendment Petition Committee, here's your director to this. Now you have this First Amendment Petition Committee. And this is where you keep track of every petition that's being worked at the county level. whether that petition is going into the cities, whether that petition is going after your coroner, your sheriff, what have you. You have somebody that is documenting and putting all this stuff online. And, oh, by the way, I didn't even put this on here, but if you go back to the Treasury Secretary, somebody, if you can make either the Treasurer or Secretary, or you may need to have an ISP manager that becomes a part of this, you have to have somebody doing your domain stuff. In other words, if you don't have it already, you actually have to have a domain so that people can go online. This is where your petitions will be. This is where all the constitutional information will be. So people will have this resource that will be available. Maybe, you know, maybe you'd want to actually make a separate box for it. It doesn't matter. It has to be done, though. However you want to do it, I don't think that that's a voting position, though. The secretary and treasurer, that can be voting, it can't be voting. You know, when it really comes down to it, if you want to have everybody vote, you can. We're not trying to create the Ten Commandments, thou shalt. We're trying to make suggestions to ensure that certain people, like politicians, like your county committeemen and your, because those are politician wannabes, and your actual county commissioners and supervisors, they don't vote on this committee. They're here to listen. They're here to explain. They're here to talk and share, you know, what they're doing and why they did what they did. And that's why that constitutional compliance director is going to be there to provide advice and to be able to help, you know, people go, hey, you know, what you just said you did, that's not good. Anyway, so you have this training and education committee chair. This training and education committee chair, this chair in this committee is responsible for both the county education districts as well as the training of the people, training of every citizen in that county to ensure that they understand. You know, one of the things that, you know, is an exit criteria, I don't say this enough because I actually need to put it into the document. We need to have a policy and a standard that every time, and I've said this before, every time a person goes to register to vote, or maybe even prior to their voting each time, they take an oath. You know, when you go to sign in, you actually stand up to the square and you state your name and you state that I will support the Constitution and support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. As a reminder that everybody is obligated to support the Constitution, not the party, not an agenda. And in so doing, it helps people place context to who and what we really are. We're not a bunch of agendas fighting each other. We're all unified as a nation in supporting the liberty of all. That's the beautiful thing. Anybody that wants to come here and follow our laws and immigrate to America can actually embrace this concept of liberty for all. Any state in the world that wants to petition to become a state in this union can become a participant in that after the criteria is met to get them so far before. And, you know, well, we're going to run out of time, so I'll have to save that for another time. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.